Welcome back to this week's episode of the Tier Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrow. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Awesome. So this week we're all over the place, so I'm running on a little sleep right now, so bear with me. I was in California for the Audi e-tron event, which we're going to talk about in a second. Seth, at the same time, was in Reno for the Interbike event, so we got to test out a ton of new e-bikes and a few other personal electric vehicles too. And then yesterday I came back from Vermont, when I went to test out the Chevy Volt with a V, the 2019 version, which actually has a few cool updates that we're going to talk about. But we're going to start with the Audi e-tron, and I always want to say e-tron Quattro, which is what we've been saying about that car for a while. But at some point in the last few weeks, they changed the marketing of it, and it's just the e-tron, which refers to sort of the new powertrain, all-electric powertrain I developed for the car. And like, you're going to have the same car with a sportsback with a different look next year, and it's going to be called the e-tron sportsback, but this one is just the e-tron. That's it. You also have the e-tron GT coming, and so forth. But we didn't learn that much from the event itself, other than Audi has a lot of money to spend on these events, because that was like a huge, huge event. They basically took over the Hilton, which is a huge hotel in Hilton and Union Square in San Francisco. Then they put hundreds of people on a boat to bring us across the bay to the Richmond to actually unveil this car. So that's a picture from the unveiling right here that you see behind me.
It's kind of amazing how much money these auto companies have for this marketing, basically. It's like otherworldly, coming from like Apple and Google, who have, you know, quite a bit more market cap. And, you know, their events, basically, you have to fly yourself to it. You have to put yourself up. And they, you know, like, they'll give you, like, breakfast. And basically, you have to pay for everything else. Whereas these auto companies will fly you out, you know, first class, put you in a nice hotel, take you around.
First class, this one.
What?
No. What was that?
All right. I got to make some calls.
And it's open bar. And that's the thing, though. It wasn't just the media. Like, they brought in hundreds of Audi employees, hundreds of Audi dealership employees. And they made a very big event out of it. Wasn't perfect. It wasn't very an efficient event, in my opinion. We didn't get to see that much of the car. Like, before the actual unveiling, which happened like at 9 p.m. local time, so midnight Eastern time, they took over sort of an auditorium in San Francisco, where they have a bunch of demonstration of each components of the car, but not the actual car itself. So we couldn't actually get a closer look, even though there was an embargo on everything either way. We didn't get to see the car first. And the actual new thing that we saw was the full production car without any camouflage, because we saw the car like for not even like years now, very close to this, but always with their wacky camouflage on it.
Yeah, I even saw it in New York with the camouflage.
Yeah, and it was pretty close to what you're seeing right now, right? It's almost the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it had different wheels, but
yeah, and it's a beautiful SUV. I mean, it looks very much like the Q5 or the Q7 or whatever size of the SUV that I think it basically fits between the Q5 and the Q7 in the lineup, even though it's more expensive than both, I think.
Didn't Elon say he used to have an Audi Q something?
I think it was a Q7, yeah. Was it the one? Yeah, before the Model X came on board, it was using the Audi Q7 or maybe Q5, I don't know. But yeah, the vehicle itself is beautiful. Oh yeah, the pricing that we see now, the pricing is the other thing that we didn't know for sure, but was confirmed. We had a pretty good idea based on the German pricing that was released a few months back. But it's starting at $74,800 before the federal tax incentive or any incentive. The first car that's going to be delivered, though, started at $86,700. That's the Edition 1, which has a special color that you can get. But once the Edition 1 is done, you have the Prestige at $81,800, which has a few more premium options inside the car. And it's also the only option you can, if you want the 21-inch wheels, That's the only option you can get, my understanding at least.
So the pricing is pretty good, kind of what we expected, compared to the iPACE, which is a much smaller vehicle. It's what, 5,000 more expense? The iPACE starts at 70,000?
Yeah, I think it's 69, so yeah, basically right. Same thing.
So 5,000 more, much bigger car.
More of an SUV look. I like the design of the iPACE a lot, but it's a little bit... it's not very much an SUV feel to it. This one really... At first glance, you'd think that Audi is going for the same market with their gas-powered SUV, and which sounds like a good thing for electric vehicle adoption as a whole. But that's what we're learning this week, is that they are very much marketing it to current electric vehicle owners. They're not trying to expand the market very much. Very much are marketing this to current EV owners. Good example of it. They started a bunch of events at Electrify America stations, charging stations, and they turned them into stores. So they're literally directly marketing to people that already have an EV, and they're coming to charge and then trying to sell them, upsell them to the new Audi. Which is fair. I mean, it's a good marketing tactic to sell a car. But what we hope for as EV enthusiasts is that every time as a new EV comes to market, that it expands the EV market because it convinces more people to buy EVs. In this case, if you're a fan of Audi's SUVs, you might be a fan of this Audi SUV, which happens to be electric, which I think is still the case. It's just that Audi's not marketing it as such.
That's frustrating because that happens a lot. Like I noticed that Jaguar was a little bit in the same boat. They seemed to think their market share was going to come from like Tesla owners, or you know, they raced it against the Tesla and all those things.
Yeah, not the same feeling.
Which would have been a lot nicer if they raced it against some of their EV. You know, not even race it against a Jaguar, race it against an Audi or Porsche or whatever.
Yeah, the Q5 is probably the biggest competitor to the iPACE, I think. And that would have been a good race, and they would have won by a wider margin than with the X too. Here I have a picture of the Frunk. I don't know if they can call it that too, since the Tesla basically.
It's like a glove box.
Yeah, it's not huge, but
it's deeper, right?
Yeah, it's certainly bigger than the iPACE has. What I don't like though is that you have to open the hood. Then there's a hood for the Frunk too. So yeah, you have to open two lids to actually get to that thing. So that's not fun.
Can you just rip off the one that's inside?
Yeah, I don't know if it has an actual function. If they don't want water can get in or something. I don't know. We couldn't ask anyone really because, like I said, we only saw the car once they unveiled it, and the unveil it was a mess. Like as soon as they unveiled it, like everybody rushed it and everything. But so I could get a few pictures, but that's it. I did get to talk to a few engineers that worked on it before the event, and a few things that stood out to me is the regen capacity of the powertrain. Very impressive regen capacity that goes up to 220 kilowatts that it can get back into the range. Can stop the car from 0.3 g's of acceleration. So.
That sounds pretty good, especially with such a heavy car like that.
Yeah, and the actually think that 30% of the range can be attributed to regen in some conditions. So it's a big part of the range estimate, which was the other thing that was weird during the event because they didn't want to share an EPA estimate even though they were launching the car in the U.S., which I thought was weird.
Maybe they just haven't gotten the official one yet.
Even if they don't get an official one, most automakers like try to share one when they launch in the market.
Try to share a guess.
An estimate. It's called an APA estimate. Like you estimate it. And instead, they stick to the WTP range, which they give, 400 kilometers? Anyway, something like, it's going to be over 200, like for sure. Is it going to be 230, 250? I don't know. They were big on their aerodynamic and drag coefficient performance, and of course, part of that was because of the 0.05 point that they managed to shave off with the first virtual mirrors that are officially available from an automaker. So that's an interesting
but not in the
development. Not in the U.S. So that's the thing that I learned. Like, I knew that there was some market that we're traversing it right now, but apparently in whole of Europe, like if you are under the EU, it's allowed since 2016, and just nobody did it yet. So now,
yeah, I mean, I guess if it's not globally, then why build that system? You know, like if you're building cars, but I don't know. Well, maybe it takes a while to build that. So from 2016,
yeah. But playing automaker to build cars specifically for Europe, so that's what they're going to do here. It's going to be offered as an option in Europe. It's going to be €1,400, I think, the option. So it's not cheap, but we got a quick demo, and it looks like it works well. The cameras don't actually move, but they are bigger than what you see on the actual screen, so you can arrange it so that so you can see the way you prefer to normally see with your side mirrors. And yes, they work with OLED displays inside the door. I would have liked to sit in the car. Well, I like to actually drive the car, have a test drive and everything, so like we normally do. But even just sitting in the car with those mirrors working, so that you get a feel of looking at this specific spot in the door, which is not something that you used to. Like, you used to look a little bit higher normally. So that's something I would have liked to do, but we didn't get the chance. It was just working on an open door without a seat or anything. So it was basically our waist. So it's not ideal. But yeah, otherwise I'm pretty excited for it. The only thing that was the biggest disappointment was that the timing on they talked about U.S. deliveries. So the U.S. deliveries was Q2 2019, even though they claim to have started production a few weeks back. So we're looking at over 6 months of wait for the car, at least in the U.S. They didn't confirm that they're going to come sooner in Europe, but we assume it will since they already started production. But we're going to...
Where are they being built? In Eastern Europe? Or
They're being built in Germany, but they have production all over the place. Like, the motors are made in Hungary.
Gotcha.
So there's a bunch of different components made all around the world. But that's pretty much it for our time with the e-tron. We're going to try to get a review unit as soon as possible, but my understanding is that we're going to have to go to Europe to try it, if you want to try it by the end of the year. Otherwise, we're going to have to wait until 6 months, if not more.
Maybe we can hook on to the Paris Auto Show or something.
Yeah, we should go there, right? Right. Yeah, well, that's only like 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, though.
Yeah, it's soon.
About the Interbike, how much fun did you have on the Interbike?
So I could go on for hours about Interbike, but so this was my first time at any kind of bike show. There's one in Europe that's a little bit bigger, but Interbike's the biggest U.S. Bike show, and it's all kinds of bikes and other vehicles. But this year, and I don't know what it's like every other year, it felt like almost every stand had some sort of electrification. Every company was doing something with electricity. And some places, like, you know, they have a wing of, like, OEM parts, and that just felt like 100% electrified.
Hmm.
So, you know, I don't know if that's... Like, for instance, the Rally booth, there was one not electrified bike. And Rally, you know, Rally is big in the regular bikes. There was one non-electrified bike and maybe 20 electrified bikes. So it just seems like the electrified portion of the bike market is where everybody is kind of thinking about right now. It's growing, it's expanding, new things are happening a lot faster than the traditional bike market. So that's why Interbike had tons of stuff. So there was all kinds of stuff there. The main room is kind of like the big bike makers, like I said, Rally and High Bike, and you know, a bunch of other brands you've heard, like Strommer, which makes a $10,000 bike. Recent Mueller, which I recently reviewed the supercharger, and a bunch of other, like, kind of top tier brands. And what's a little bit boring about those guys is they use all almost the same drivetrain, and it's made by Bosch. And Bosch, you know, I would say is at least 50% of the market of e-bikes right now, and that's fine. Like, they make a very good system; it's very reliable because of their market size and the company itself. You know, something goes wrong with your motor, they'll fix it for you pretty quickly, and they'll have a bike shop nearby. So the main floor is full of these bike shop, bike companies that kind of use the same drivetrain. So like you get on one bike, you pedal it around, you feel the same acceleration and, you know, quiet and whatever as the next one. So from a reviewing standpoint, that's a little bit boring. Still a lot of fun to ride bikes, and they even bust us out to North Star, which is a big resort near Lake Tahoe, and they let us bomb the mountain with like 100 different bikes. So I would just say if you like biking, you should go to Interbike next year. It's just so much fun.
Well, was it like a media event first, and then there's a public event going on?
Or yeah, so they do. Now? They do have the public part. So you have to pay $550, which is, you know, it's not cheap.
Yeah, right.
But you get 2 days of picking a bike up, like any, you know, any of 100 different bikes, and either taking a gondola to the top of the mountain or just, you know, riding the electric bike up the mountain and then
going
bombing.
Downhill.
And they have a bunch of trails, like easy ones, hard ones. Tons of fun. Like, I just couldn't, you know, like the at the end of the day, like my back hurt, my arms hurt, you know, from hitting the brakes so much. Like I was just like, and I just, you know, we wanted to keep going and going until like they kicked us out. So, you know, that's one part of the event. So you get to try out all the different bikes, and then they have a expo, which is more like a traditional CES kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where you have the booths and the big signs and the reps out there, and everybody's kind of showing off their wares. So, you know, what I was saying before, Bosch pretty much owns like a big share of the main room. And there are secondary, I guess. Rose is another German motor company. Their background is in like windshield wiper motors and car seat motors. But they actually make a really good bike motor. It's kind of claim to fame is it's way quieter than Bosch's, because Bosch's uses vinyl gears, whereas this uses a belt to do the stepping of the motor speed. So Rose was there, and they have a number of bikes from top tier manufacturers. And then, as you would expect, Shimano is on a few bikes, and so is Yamaha. Yamaha also came out with their own bike line this year that we took a look at. Although it was surprising, like, you know, would think Yamaha, if they're making the batteries and the motors and the bikes, that they would be really well integrated. But this year's bikes look like they just slapped a Yamaha motor on a typical bike, you know, like a aftermarket thing.
Hmm.
So that was a little bit surprising. And we heard that some of Yamaha's partners who put Yamaha motors on their own bikes were a little bit upset that they're making their own bikes now.
Oh, really?
So that's kind of, interesting. And, you know, being at my first bike thing, I didn't really know the vibe there. But, like, there's so much gossip because, you know, these bike companies go from one to another. Here's a good example. I have a Rally Redux electric bike that has a Brose motor and drivetrain. And my battery went bad on it. And I was talking to the guys about it at Rally. And they said, yeah, did you see the 2018 model? And I was like, no, I hadn't seen it yet. And it's now using a Bosch engine and or a Bosch motor, a Bosch battery, and actually has bigger tires. It's much nicer. So that's, you know, that's kind of what goes on behind the scenes. So that was the major part of the thing. And, you know, there was a lot of really cool bikes there. And, you know, frankly, if I'm like 80% of bikers or 50% of bikers should go get one of those, like Bosch engine, you get the full bike with full warranty from a respected name that's going to be there forever. Then there's like the OEM land where you see bikes that you've never seen before in all kinds of crazy shapes and sizes. You see scooters. You see pretty much just like anything with two wheels. And that, you know, like that's mostly Chinese, Korean companies that are bringing their stuff over. So we saw some like really like interesting stuff there. So in the scooter world, we saw a scooter that had all-wheel drive, and it had this one had 500 watt motors on front and back. And actually, the only time I wrecked the whole weekend was on that scooter. And then it also had full suspension on front and back. So it would go from like 0 to 30 like almost immediately. It was crazy. And they're coming out with a faster one. So that's a 1 kilowatt scooter. They're coming out with a 2.5 kilowatt version of that later, which I think. And so we asked the CEO guy. I don't know if he was the CEO, but the head guy there. You know, is this dangerous? It sounds dangerous. And he's like, oh yeah, this is really dangerous. Like, no bones about it. He's like, this is really dangerous.
Yeah, so, you don't want to be going more than like 30 miles per hour.
There was no reason.
And when you say scooter, like a bunch of people think the scooter is a...
No.
It's like the
Razor scooter.
Yeah, the race, like a Razor scooter that you're talking about.
Yeah, like you put along.
So you fall from that, like if you land on your feet, like you're a pro athlete or something.
Yeah, I mean, especially at 30 miles per hour. And he was saying something like
this. It's this one, right? That we're seeing, like the one you tested right now?
Yeah. So, crazy scooter. And then, so from the bike department, there was a lot of like really cheap stuff, like, you know, fat tire, like kind of like a Saunders, like a fat tire bike with a, you know, 1 kilowatt engine, which is a little bit faster than Saunders. And they had those for like under $1,000, which is like, you know, that's pretty interesting. You got a bike that can go probably 30 miles per hour on big wheels, on electric alone. Like, that's not a bad way to get around town for $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But with then they had the crazy, like the real, there's a company called Leili, that we started hearing like people talk about like this company. There's like one place in the back corner that like you got to go check out. And so we went back there and they had a 5 kilowatt fat tire bike, top speed 62 miles per hour. It's like 104 kilometers. So yeah, you know, you're basically highway speeds on a fat tire mountain bike, and there's like no extra reinforcement. It's just a regular like fat tire bike. So
were you able to try it? Or
I did. I got it up to 45 on the little test track that's like around the parking lot, and it's almost like a meet. Like if you go full, you get a wheelie.
A bit like the Surround.
A little bit, actually, a lot like the Surround.
But the Surround is not Zwirl. You said 5 kilowatts. So was it Zwirl motor?
So this one was 5 kilowatt rear hub motor.
Yeah. They like the Surround. The Surround is 6 at peak, but you mostly get 5. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, this one has bigger tires than the Surround, so maybe that slows it down a little bit as well. But you're going 40 miles per hour for real. Like it's not, you know, almost gets to 40. It's like you get to 40 in like under 10 seconds.
Matt asked if you saw Gripe there. Gripe, which is the like the subsidiary of Rimac, which is known for the one.
Gripe wasn't there, but there were bikes that looked like, and this bike kind of looked like a Gripe.
Yeah, I think Gripe got pushed out of the market, basically, which it was just way too expensive. And yeah, you have things now like the Surround, which is like half the price of the Gripe.
I mean, if you go
6,000 euros, I think, or 7,000 euros starts in the Gripe. So it's like almost $10,000.
Yeah, I mean, so there was a road bike version of that, but it was a 10 kilowatt, and it supposedly goes 100 miles per hour, and I swear to God, it's not, like, this thing doesn't look like it's built much stronger than a typical, like, you know, road bike. So, like, you know, these are basically, like, death traps. But I also tried that on the track, also went 0 to 40, like, almost immediately. And you know they're built like they're not going to kill you at least immediately, and that it has all that power. So like the question is like how much more expensive would it be to build like a strong frame, a little bit like the Surround, but make it a nice road bike and make it legal, like kind of like a Zero or an Alta motorcycle, but still keep like the economics there, like. You know, the battery costs how much and the whatever. And, you know, maybe you can, you know, get a bike for like under $5,000 that you can go on the highway with that doesn't look like garbage, that you feel safe on. I feel like there's some middle ground that we're not covering because, like, the lowest end Zeros are, you know, well over $10,000.
Yeah, a decent one started at like 12 or something like that. Like,
right. So I feel like there's some middle ground where you could get a nice, you know, highway cap compatible bike capable for a lot less than something that's out there. And, you know, Micah does cover Mike Atoll, our e-bikes expert guru. He does cover some of like the middle ground stuff. There's a company out of California that's producing like a $2,000 street bike, but it's more like a scooter. And he's actually reviewing a Gen Z scooter right now, which I'm excited to hear about. But these are like, you know, there's no like assumption of pedaling on them,
mm-hmm.
but they are street legal and they can, you know, they can keep up with traffic. They're not like, you know, where bikes are sometimes falling off the edge of the speed. So there's that whole world of, you know, where we think about, oh, you know, we could get a container ship full of those over and sell them at double the price. Like, you know, the entrepreneur in us is kind of like, we could do something like that. But, you know, something else that kind of was a, you know, discussion among the vendors there is the Trump tax cuts. And we met, or sorry.
Not, yeah, the tax tariff.
Yeah. Tariff, yeah. The, you know, the prevailing wisdom is like, yeah, all of our prices are going up. We're not going to, you know, we're just going to multiply by 1.25 everything that we have here. Mm-hmm. Some of the more shady people were like, oh, we can just route it through Vietnam or, you know, we have ways of getting around the tariff. So that's not, you know, some will, some won't. That's not good. Yeah, I mean, it's just
no one is talking about bringing the manufacturing to the U.S., which was the intention of the...
No, that would just make people laugh if you even brought it up.
Yeah, because like 25% is a lot less than what it would cost to bring it to the U.S.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, before it took like 2 years to even get your factory.
The time is money.
Right. So, it's just such an interesting event. Like, I've kind of recently gotten... more and more into e-bikes, and this was kind of just like a toy land for that kind of stuff, because mm-hmm. you know, you've got the whole variety of motors, you got the whole variety of bike platforms, so you know, you have everything from like a street, like a you know, like a 10 speed kind of frame, very small wheels, electrified. In Micah's post you'll see both Bafang, which is the kind of the top Chinese motor company, and another, Forenza or something, are building very small motors, but for like Tour de France kind of bikes.
Okay.
So it doesn't take a lot of energy to get those bikes going pretty fast. Everything up to like fat tire bikes that are even bigger than fat tires, almost like motorcycle tires or like ATV tires. They've got kids bikes. They've got, you know, they've got recumbent bikes. Just every shape and form. It's just like, and Micah did an amazing job. Like, I think he put up almost 5,000 words and tons of pictures and videos. So definitely check out that post if you have some time and are interested in bikes. But I don't want to take up the whole
podcast. Yeah, so it gave you guys just like basically a summary of what happened there. But Micah's post is really more extensive, like 5,000 words, like you said. And there's a bunch of videos and everything. So definitely check that out. But we're already half an hour in, and we covered three posts, so we should move on. Really quick, I'm going to go through a little bit with the Chevy Volt 2019, which I went to Vermont for yesterday. We already talked a little bit about the Bolt EV 2019, which didn't get much of an upgrade besides like a few new colors and a few like connectivity features and stuff like that. But apparently the seats too got an upgrade, but I didn't see that at all.
Oh, that's interesting, because the seats were one of the sore spots of the Bolt.
Yeah, well, they still are, in my opinion. Like before 2019 version, the side support was just way too small for me. I'm not a big guy, and like the side support was really an issue, and it was the same thing with this one. Even though they said they changed it a little bit. I don't know. We focus more on the Chevy Volt 2019 because it got a bigger upgrade. Not exactly the powertrain, though, but it still has an impact on the most important thing and the only reason why we even cover the Volt as a plug-in hybrid. The fact that you can get some good electric mileage out of it. You have an 18.4 kilowatt-hour battery pack. That's the same as last year. Didn't change. But what did change is... First off, the charging capacity now went to 7.2 kilowatts. That's twice as much as you got last year. And what does it do is with 53 miles of EPE estimated range, like you can get a lot of it. Most people would cover the full commute, but if you use it for a little bit longer distance, charging is an option. It's always an option, but it doesn't do you much with a 3.5 kilowatt charger. You need to stay there for hours and hours and hours just to get a full charge, or just like to get like a few 20, 30 miles of range. Now, if you have access to level 2 at work, in 3 hours you're gonna be fully charged. If you want to go on a road trip, 53 miles and a 7.2 kilowatt charger doesn't do enough to do a full electric road trip, but you might have to get less gas. And if you stop somewhere, you try to find somewhere that you get on level 2, then you're going to get a full charge, and you get your next 50 or so miles less if you're on the highway are gonna be electric. So that's good. The best example was what we did for the media test drive. It was in Vermont, and we took the back country road, so not very efficient in terms of the highway is not efficient too. So we started with some highway, and then we went some very hilly backcountry roads, which took like 6 miles, I think, 7.1 miles out of the estimated range. That's a pretty cool screen that they got on the Vault that I wasn't aware of. They tell you, like, based on your driving. So this wasn't my driving. Actually, I was paired with Dan Hinmans from Hinmans.com, and his technique, so the way he drove the car, gave in 0.6 more miles out of the 53 estimated mileage, electric mileage, but he lost 7.1 based on the terrain, so that's mostly like the hills and everything. Then also lost about a mile based on the climate settings, and the 1.5 based on the outside temperature. But we got there with like 4 miles left of all electric battery powered range. And when we left, we were uphill when we were there, so we went downhill. And by the time we're downhill, like a few miles, like 1 or 2 miles, we had 6 miles instead of 4 when we started out. But we lost that pretty quickly, and we got there. That's when I was driving. We got the change to the engine, of course, which is very seamless. If you've ever been involved, you don't even feel it at all. And we got to Ben and Jerry's. We got a Bend and Jerry's, and by that time we had driven 27.5 miles on gas, 47.4 on electric. So normally with him there, we need to go back on just the gas tank, but at Bend and Jerry's they have level 2 charger, so we started charging, and we were there till about 3 hours, so we get a full charge. So on my way back home, not back home, but back at the hotel, it was like a 45 miles trip back to the hotel, and I got like 30 miles of those on electric, which I normally wouldn't have gotten, or at least like if it was the whole charger, I would have probably gotten away with like 15 miles. So in that whole trip, with the new 2019 version, you get like 50 more miles out of range in this specific situation. Of course, it's a very specific situation. You have to figure out for yourself, based on your driving, your normal driving, what kind of difference it could make. But yeah, and those 30 miles, I didn't get the 50 miles EPA. It was basically hauling the highway, and I was maybe driving a little bit fast, not driving very efficiently. The other big change for the 2019 version, and that's big for here in Montreal, everywhere you have a cold climate, is the engine-assisted heating system, which is something that you had since the first-generation Vault. The engine kicks in to assist in the heating whenever it gets cold outside, like minus... I've heard anything that with it kicking in from minus 10 Celsius, anything close to that. So even though you have a short commute, let's say a 15 miles commute, you could get just on the battery pack there with the heating system running on the battery and everything without having to kick in the engine. But because the way that the system is set up, you couldn't disconnect that at all. So even though you can get there on battery, you still have to spend some gas. The engine kicks in and it helps the heating system. With the 2019 version, they tune it differently so that now it only kicks in at minus 25 Celsius.
Which is cool.
Yeah, which is a big difference. I mean, here in Montreal, you still get below minus 25 a few times a year. So you would still get to spend gas however you want to use the vault, but a lot less often during the winter for sure, because most of the time it's going to be closer to minus 15 in those range. So basically the bottom line is with the 2019 vault, you can get more electric usage out of it than you would with the previous version. If you get the charging, because I didn't mention that, I think the new charger is an option on the base version, $750 option. It's standard if you get the higher end version, which I think is called the premium something, premium LT. So yeah, you can get more electric usage out of it, which is a good thing if you ask me. But it's still a plug-in hybrid. It's still, in my view, sort of a step between that, between gas-powered cars and all electric. It has some compromises because of that.
Yeah, I think the Volt occupies a very interesting spot. It is actually a solid EV because it does have 50 miles of range, whereas, like, you know, the Prius plug-in or whatever plug-in hybrids, or a lot of the BMW plug-ins, for instance, they only have, like, 10 or 15, 20 miles of range. And, you know, you're going to hit gas pretty often with those. Whereas the Volt, you can pretty much guarantee, unless you have a long commute, that you're going to at least get to work on electricity. And then, theoretically, if you have a charger there, you can get home.
Without charger, too, which should be mentioned that I think it's like 35 miles the daily driving range of most people.
Right.
Both ways.
Yeah, like round trip is under 20 miles, yeah. Or one way is under 20 miles.
You're always people that tells you, but then that's not me. Me, I have to do like 60 miles a day. Yeah, that's you, but the average is not that at all.
Right. And even 60 miles, like most EVs, if you can charge. Anyway, yeah. That's like. So we kind of like the Volt because, like, it doesn't shift on as well. Like, if you're driving, for instance, I drove the Mitsubishi Outlander. And there was no way to stop the PHEV, and there's no way to stop the electric from coming on. If you're going up a hill, it's just the gas to come on. Yeah, so the gas comes on when you go up hills. When you try accelerate to get on the highway, it's kind of like there's no rhyme or reason to it. And that's similar to the Prius plug-in. Like, we thought the new Prius plug-in was going to be electric only, but if you hit the hills or whatever, the gas kicks in. That's what's great about the Volt, and it even got greater this time because now it won't kick in until the temperature gets below 25 degrees Celsius, which is quite cold.
Yeah, or if you run out of battery.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's a very good update, really.
And it's a good transition car. So if you're nervous about electric driving and you want to have that gas backup that you know and love for, 20, 30 years or something, you're used to it, it's there. And then you drive a Volt for like a couple years and you're like, yeah, the next car I'm gonna get is gonna be a full electric, maybe Chevy Bolt or whatever, Tesla, because you know that you've driven it so many miles and you've used just almost completely electricity. And actually, the one time that you did use gas, you wish you had a Bolt, because the Volt has much more range.
Yeah, and if you use gas, if you have to get to go to the gas station a lot less often, because it becomes even more of a chore, it's not routine anymore.
Right.
Like, if you go like every month, every 2 months or so, like, I have to go to the gas station now. You don't want to do that anymore, and you're going to go all electric.
Right.
So, yeah, that's another aspect. Moving on to Tesla. Let's talk a little bit about Tesla.
Tesla, okay.
What is that?
Yeah.
The Tesla Model 3 got its safety ratings from the crash test with NHTSA. And it got a perfect safety rating of 5-star in every category and every subcategory. So a perfect rating from NHTSA, which it was the same that they got with the Model S and X, perfect rating in both cases. But and most cars these days, maybe not most, but a lot of cars get that perfect safety 5-star safety rating, but not that many get perfect safety ratings 5 stars in every category. So very good. For the Model 3, because a lot of people, like, that was a surprise for me, but and it does make sense. So I don't know why it was a surprise, because personally, I'd never think about that when I buy a car. But most people, it's the main thing that they think about when they buy a car. It's the safety of the vehicle. So
when you get older, you start caring about that, and like if you have kids.
Yeah, if you have kids, I assume it's a like a, you've heard that from the father of the kid that died in the Model S in Florida during the crash. Like a lot of plenty of people were saying, oh, the father should have never given a super fast Tesla to the kid, which was speeding when he died, unfortunately. But that's what the father said, actually. He said, I bought the Model S to my kid because it was the highest safety rating one. So then Tesla did the right thing after that, too. They actually came out with a new feature when if you give your car to your kid, you can limit the top speed and everything, which is a good thing. But yeah, you can see all the crash test of video if you have you're not bothered by seeing beautiful Model 3s being completely destroyed to pieces.
Yeah, you know, I think the best one is the side impact one where, you know, it goes right into the driver's side.
Yeah.
And like the Model 3 barely moves, whereas if you look at other I think we got a Twitter response where it had like, you know, Camry and all the other kind of similar sized cars. And the pole ends up like, you know, in the middle of the driver area, whereas the Model 3 barely even moved the vehicle.
Yeah. And after that was revealed, we posted that early yesterday morning. Elon Musk started tweeting about, oh, you're going to see also the real probability of injuries numbers that's going to coming out. They haven't released that yet, so we're going to look into that. But what Musk said, he said that he thinks that it might be the lowest probability of injuries ever, which when he says that, Musk claims that it makes the car the car with the less chance of being injured in it. But he said the same thing with the Model S or maybe the Model X, I don't think. And it's had some issues with those claims. So take that with a grain of salt. But
I can't believe that they still let him use Twitter.
Yeah, to be fair, though, I wasn't completely on board with Nitsa's retort to that. Like, maybe like Elon didn't phrase it correctly on Twitter at that time, but he was a lot more careful this time around, I think, on this front. But we'll wait until we actually see those numbers from Nitsa, if they even release them. But then Tesla's really probably going to release their own blog post based on the numbers making their claims. We're going to look into that when that's released. What else we learned this week? We posted earlier today about the Model 3 production numbers. As usual on Friday, we try to update you with the latest production numbers, which are especially important now that Tesla is pushing for being profitable by this quarter. And they're trying to be profitable this quarter, and if not, hopefully next quarter. And that's around, of course, on Model 3 production ramping up and gross margin increasing. What we revealed today is that this week the Model 3 production went down to 3,800 units, around 3,800 units from 44 last week. But there's still some good news, mainly that they achieved last Friday a production record of over 100 cars in a day for the Model 3, just for Model 3.
Just Model 3, yep.
Yeah, so that's good. And during 2 days during the week, they got the production of both Model S and X and Model 3. To over 1,000 units. So the reason why the overall drop, because it was 3,800 for the Model 3, but 6,000, or about 6,000 total with all three vehicles combined. And the reason why it dropped from last week seems to be because of Sunday. So it was, for some reason, Sunday that they only produced 325 cars, around 325 cars. That's Model S and X combined with Model 3, so... Not sure what happened there, but it looks like there was probably a production shutdown for a while. Maybe a shift or two or something like that.
Maybe the Jewish holiday. Probably not.
Isn't that like every Sunday?
No. I mean the
no, that's Christian. You're not supposed to work on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't work very much with today's business world. But, yeah, so the new totals now are... over 70,500 cars, including 46,000 Model 3s.
And what is Tesla's estimate? 50 for the quarter?
50 to 55. So if they produce the same thing that they produced this week, for they're going to be right below. They're going to be very cutting close for the 50,000 mark. But if you go with the day average, they should be right over it. But there's still the hope that the recent burst in production that we've seen can be maintained for a longer period, like we've seen like 2 days in a row at over 1,000. They were like earlier this morning, they were like 4 days in a row too, that they were like close to 1,000 units total. So if they can get that again this the fall next week, and then we can get see closer to the higher end of the range that they were hoping for. As for overall production though, that sounds like less likely. But they could get close to 80,000 units total, I think, which would be pretty good.
Yeah, not bad at all.
More than pretty good. It depends always on what standpoint. If you compare it to legacy automakers' general production, it's not that big. But then if you compare it to any automaker's production of all-electric vehicles with a range of anything close, the Model 3, Model S, and X, then it's completely unprecedented that we've seen those numbers. Yeah, another thing that we revealed yesterday about the Model 3 was the new orders for the performance Model 3 version. We've just talked about production, which Tesla needs to maintain at higher levels than they did in the past few quarters. But they also need to increase the gross margin, and one way they can do that is selling higher margin vehicles. And the dual motor performance Model 3 is certainly one of those, starting at $64,000 instead of $49,000 for the long-range base Model 3, basically. The base version, of course, is supposed to start at $35,000, but that's not yet available. Yeah, what we reveal is that in the past 2 weeks, so Tesla apparently has a new program in-house, much like the referral program for the Tesla owners. The internal salespeople have an incentive to sell the Model S and X, especially the inventory vehicles. So not necessarily like new custom orders too, but they have to, at the end of quarter, Tesla is trying to move their inventory vehicles to, of course, boost their quarterly number. And to also sell the performance Model 3. And what we learned is that since from September 7 to yesterday, they has managed to sell 1,124 Model 3 in North America, which is pretty impressive, because we're talking about being like 4 months after they first opened the orders. So that must have been like a huge influx of orders, but that was based on years of reservation holders being able to order the new cars. So now 4 months later, that gives us a better look at the order rate of the vehicle. So in the past 2 weeks, it was around like 600 a week, which is a significant part of the production capacity of the Model 3 and all, which like we saw just now was 3,800 for last week. So that increases the overall mix. Inside the mix of Model 3s, it increased the average price of the car a lot.
And it probably gave a lot of referral codes to Tesla owners too.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that changes a little bit, because if you cannot say that that's going to be the average going forward, because during those 2 weeks, there was the last 2 weeks that owners were able to, if you order a Model 3 Performance, you get the free unlimited supercharging. Now it's back to just $100 credit if you use a referral code. So that probably artificially boosted the numbers that Tesla normally gets. But at the same time, there's going to be another artificial boost coming up in the U.S. with the end of the full federal tax credit by the end of the year. So in the next month or two, you're going to get the deadline to custom order a car like the Model 3 Performance, which is not very... it's sort of available in inventory. Tesla has boosted inventories too. We talked about that a few weeks back, but they changed their way to custom order and to deliver the cars. But for the most part, it's a custom ordered car, and they're going to be a deadline to get the car by the end of the year, which a lot of people are going to want to get just to get that 3750 difference in the federal tax credit, which is kind of a lot of money. Still on the Model 3, key fob. Who wants a key fob? A lot of people, apparently. Model 3, of course, as you know now, is only available with in terms of entry and starting the car. You connect it to the Bluetooth of your phone, which give you a keyless entry feel. Or you use the key card. You need to use, like, for an example, there was a valet at the Vermont Hotel yesterday when I went there. So you're not going to give your phone to the valet. So you still need to carry the key card when you're going anywhere. So I had to give him my key card. If I had a key fob, I'd just have given my key fob. Model 3 is coming up with a key fob. Tesla's coming up with the key fob on Model 3. There were rumor of that, so for the past few months that was reported, but now it was confirmed with the new images from the FCC that show that the new key fob is for the Model 3. We had a poll about it, seeing who would prefer the current version to get it. It's just, the poll doesn't work with that. It's so weird. Answer first.
I can read it to you if you want. The key fob was 51.67%, and the phone and NFC key card was 48.33%. So 3,700 votes to 3,500 votes. Pretty close to even, but key fob went out by a few percentage points.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so I think a lot of people... So we contacted Tesla about some info about that. Like, it's public now. We know it's coming. So what about you tell us what's your plan with that? Are you going to... Is it going to just be offered with new cars? Is it going to be... People are going to be able to purchase it as a retrofit and have it connected to the service center? They're going to link it to your car, whatever. So how much is it going to cost? If it's that. They didn't even answer me.
Wow. I noticed that since I have Android and an iPhone, I feel like the people with Android phones, the Bluetooth stops working more often for the Model 3 doors than the iPhone. I don't know if that's something that can be fixed.
It's not just you. A lot of people reported that.
So if you have an
Android... might have been fixed in a recent Tesla mobile app update.
Okay.
We've heard that it was fixed for a lot of people with might be in a month ago or something like that.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, if your phone, whether it's an iPhone or Android, doesn't work as well, maybe this is a nice little solution for you.
Yeah. I haven't had any issue with mine so far with the Bluetooth connection on my phone, but if they offer one at a reasonable price, I might go for it, I think.
Yeah, they're kind of cool to have anyway.
Yeah. The dash cam feature. So Elon Musk has previously linked the dash cam feature to the version 9 release, but when the version 9 was or an early alpha build of version 9 was leaked last month, earlier this month, but it was a build that was dated, I think, the last week of August. Didn't have any dash cam feature in it. Didn't have much in it aside from the UI on the center display that looked more like the Model 3 UI. So now Elon said that the engineering team got together and made a version of the feature, which he says is going to be available as a beta in the first version of version 9, which is supposed to come out in the next few weeks. It was supposed to be in the early access fleet like this week or something like that, and I don't think it's there yet. So don't hold your breath, everyone, but at least... Well, don't hold your breath about the version 9 being released, but at least it sounds like the dash cam feature is going to be in the version 9, which is a good news. It's especially good news because I've been hearing about people that are getting their Tesla, especially like the Model 3 now, since there are more of them out there, being vandalized, and the owner swears that they don't think that it has anything to do with them personally. That they're just being vandalized because it's a Tesla, and they don't even know that's who's the owner. So it's not like a personal thing; it's just people vandalizing car because it's a Tesla. There was a big one in Montreal last week where the guy, his whole hood completely keyed, the entire hood. So that's worrying me a lot. So I didn't want to buy that. I want a dash cam, but I thought I'm not gonna spend like $100-$200 on something if they're gonna just offer it to me as a software update.
Actually, you know, it will function as a theft deterrent if everybody knows that every single Tesla, all the cameras in them are going all the time. You know, a vandalism or theft deterrent to know that that car is recording everything around it at all times.
But so, they need to release the feature for
people to release it, but like in the future after they release it and everybody has it and you start seeing YouTube videos of people vandalizing and getting caught or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that'll be another kind of feather in Tesla's cap.
Mm-hmm. But still, like the timing of it is important. Like I'm especially delaying the purchase of a dash cam, thinking that this is going to come the next month. But if not, it's might as well buy one if it's still delayed again. Oh, what happened here? Tesla increases supercharger idle fee. So to decrease wait time. So we already know about idle fees. It's something that Tesla introduced back in 2016, a 40-cent fee per minute if you leave your Tesla at the charger after it's done charging for more than 5 minutes. So after 5 minutes, you start getting charged $0.4 per minute. Tesla is increasing that now to 50 cents if the occupation of the supercharger is between 50% and 100%. If it's 100% occupied, so there's might be someone waiting to get a charge, then it goes up to $1. $1 in the US, $1.30 in Canada. And if it's less than 50% occupied, then they waive the fee completely. So you don't have to worry about it if you just go to a station and there's like no one there, which is there are a lot of stations like that right now, depending on when you use it. But if there's people, try to think about that and try to be a little polite about it and try to get your cars.
Yeah, the over 100% thing is really annoying when that happens.
Mm-hmm. And if you still have a 5 minute period like that they waive the fee. There was a few other things that was in the update too that we got. If your account goes to $50 and it's unpaid, so your unpaid balance on the website goes to $50, they will remove your supercharger access until it's paid. So that's the way they're making sure that people are paying for it. So they're not going to do like a credit check on you and whatnot just for the supercharger idle fees. So that's their way of incentivizing people to actually pay those fees, which get accumulated on your Tesla account on your website.
That's a good way to do it, I think.
Yeah. And they're going to, so on the website, on your Tesla account, you can link a credit card for that. But they say that they're also going to be in the future update, you're going to be able to link it to your directly from the car. Hmm. That's not a big difference, but whatever.
So in other news, VW had yet another press release. But in this press release, they have vehicles like the eCabby, the cargo e-bike, which they announced during Interbike, which should have been at Interbike, but and then the ID Buzz Cargo. And I think the ID Buzz Cargo is clearly the most interesting.
Apparently, they're all kind of interesting because apparently they're all coming to production. Like, it's all things that they want to actually produce. So that's Volkswagen commercial vehicles, which is a different division than the Volkswagen passenger cars. In terms of the ID Buzz Cargo, of course, you're going to see that it's like the ID Buzz period, which was the microbus that Volkswagen unveiled 2 years ago, which is coming to production in 2022. They actually say that the cargo version is going to come out in 2021. So they want to bring it to production in the next 2 to 3 years. And they have, like you said, the eCabby, which is made to be a taxi and an electric taxi. They have the Transporter one, which, I don't know. This is basically like a shuttle, I think, an electric shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the cargo one, it looks cool, the little cargo bike. I like the frame of it.
I wonder how the steering is going to work, because it looks kind of like the two wheels will have to turn with the... Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, I don't know if two... Yeah. Yeah, I want to try it, though. Moving on. Oh, yeah, well, that's something that we learned with the unveiling of the e-tron, actually, but a day later, Amazon actually sent us some more information. They're getting into the full electric car charger installation process. So normally, Amazon already sells a bunch of home electric car chargers. You can order it directly from the company. But now they are combining that with their Amazon Home Services, which links you from Amazon to people like cleaning services and the workers and things like that.
Yeah, local contractors.
Local contractors, exactly. Now what they're going to do is they're going to combine the fact that they sell their home chargers and those services. They're going to include electricians that are certified to install home chargers. And you're going to handle the whole process through Amazon, where you have to just answer a few questions and order the charger. Then they're going to link you to the electricians and you can pay from Amazon. So that's just a way to streamline the whole process, which is actually not that complicated either. You just... you buy the home chargers from whatever, from Amazon right now, or from any other other retailer, or from the manufacturer themselves, like in the case of Tesla. And you just call your local electrician. Most of them, if they're a master electrician, they are able to install that. But you can get an estimate from Amazon by answering a few questions. So that could be cool too. Just an easier way to handle that.
Yeah, I mean, basically, all an electrician has to do is install a dryer or oven plug, NEMA 1450, into your garage. And depending on how far away from your box that is, that can be anywhere from like 15 minutes of work to a few hours.
Yeah, if you go with the standard like 30 amps system, for sure. Lucid Motors funding secured. That was your little contribution to the headline set.
Funding secured.
Funding secured, I remind you, everyone. Lucid Motors, if you don't remember, you might, because they haven't been much around for the past 2 years since unveiling the Lucid Air and announcing that they're going to have that big $700 million EV factory in Arizona. They were trying for the past 2 years to secure the money to actually make those things, but they weren't able to until just now. They signed an agreement earlier this year with the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund, which was the same fund that Tesla was talking about. Well, they invested already like almost 5% into Tesla, but they're also talking about them about a possible take private move, which of course never happened. But they decided to still invest at least in Lucid Motors, so they're very much getting involved now, the Saudi Arabians, into electrification with a big stake in Tesla. Now also a significant stake in Lucid Motors. And what Lucid Motors said basically is that that's going to enable them to move forward with the Arizona EV factory. So at first, when they first unveiled the car, they said 2018. Of course, that could never happen. Last year, they were saying 2019. Now that they finally have the money, they're saying 2020 is going to be when the Lucid Air is going to be a release. So what we've seen so far, the Lucid Air, it's a very cool car. I mean, very... they have a nice powertrain that's very competitive with other electric sedans like the Model S. They were talking about the very aggressive pricing too, which was interesting and everything. But now my concern is that with those 2 years of delays that we just seen, by 2020, the competition might have moved ahead already with the development process, because we know it takes a while to get a car to market, even longer if you don't even have the factory ready yet. So I don't know. It's going to be a lot tougher, I think, for Lucid Air now than it was 2 years ago, if they could have secured the money 2 years ago. But I'm still hopeful, because there are a lot of great people working there. They were able to recruit some top talent over the last 2 years.
Yeah, it would be nice to see a second pure EV company get going.
Well, Faraday Future did get its own investment. They were sort of the same situation for a while.
A third EV company.
Yeah. They were in a sales situation, and then they got their money secured earlier this year, like in January, something like that. Now, Lucid Motors also get their money. So everyone got their money at the end.
Yep.
Which is good for electrification effort. Speaking of something good for the electrification, look at that car.
It looks like they took some inspiration from like a Camaro or a Charger or something.
Yeah, not the new Camaro, no. Have you seen the new Camaro?
No.
Terrible. They completely destroyed the image of the Camaro. This one looks more like a Camaro than the new Camaro, really. And it's coming from a French automaker. It's coming from Peugeot.
That's kind of unprecedented. I don't think I've ever seen Peugeot with a car that looks like an American car.
Well, it's actually, they said that they're taking their heritage from the 504. That was a coupe that was in the 70s and 80s, I think. I think the 80s ended production like 85 or 84, something like that. And I think right now it looks more like a Camaro still. Like of course, Peugeot didn't have that car for the past 30 years, so it didn't evolve like the muscle cars and the coupe did in those years, like the Camaro did. So I think that's why we see that car and we think more of the Camaro than we think of the 405. But the 504. But why we're talking about that car is not because it's a cool-looking muscle car. It's because the cool-looking muscle car that happens to be all electric. And Very cool looking one for sure. But they also talked about the electric powertrain. We got the interior too. We have to talk about the interior a little bit.
Interior is pretty cool.
They said that it's equipped with a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is pretty big for a coupe, and 600 kilometers of range. They said that 100 kilowatt hour battery pack enables that's 373 miles. Of course, that's WTP, so real world range should be closer to something like 500 kilometers or 300 miles, or something like that. They're talking about a all-wheel drive electric powertrain. They didn't say how many motors, so I would assume that it's at least a dual motor system, which is make more sense when doing an all-wheel drive in an electric car. Talking about 340 kilowatts of total output for 0 to 62 miles per hour, 100 kilometers in less than 4 seconds, top speed of 137 miles per hour, 220 kilometers an hour. And look at that interior. It's built around autonomous drive. It's built to be autonomous, but they want you to still be able to drive. So what they did, and they want to be a fun experience. Of course, the muscle car-like vehicle. They want to be built around the driver. So you have a steering wheel and everything, but it retracts to go to autonomous mode to give you more space to enjoy that beautiful velvet blue interior of the car. It's sort of like the 70s car bench feel to it, but it's not actual bench. It's two captain seats, it's two independent seats, but I love the interior for some reason. I just find it very cool.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
That steering wheel is kind of like the Tesla Roadster a little bit.
Yeah, even cooler than the Tesla Roadster, I think. It's I like the wood veneer on the sides, but the seat I cannot get over with them. It's just so cool. If you're only listening, as you only, you know, we're watching some pictures right now, but you can go on Electrek. We posted all of them, and it looks really pretty. I just want Peugeot to make that car.
Yeah,
I mean they need to get into electric cars for sure, and I think this one is a great one to start with. It reminds me a little bit about the Polestar 1, that Polestar unveiled, that Volvo unveiled. But ended up being a plug-in hybrid for some whatever reason, even though they said that Polestar is going to be a whole electric brand, but they're going to start the whole electric with the Polestar 2. I think this one should be a great whole electric car. If you can make the autonomous thing, make it. But if not, if it's not ready, just make that car as it is, as an all-electric muscle car with whatever autonomous features you can bring in. And Peugeot has been talking about coming back to North America for a while now. Of course, they're not only available in Europe, but maybe in Asia, I don't know. Come back to the U.S. with that car and try to compete with Mustang and
Camaro. Do it soon. Do it like this year or next year, something soon. If they they wait till like 2025 when realistically that's about when this will come out.
They can make it before that. Like, come on, 2021, something like that. There's not going to be that many...
not Mustang, in 2021, but I feel like
Mustang all the trick, like,
yeah, there is that the mock thing.
Yeah, everyone that's listening now, go on Twitter, go on Facebook, whatever, and tweet to Peugeot and Facebook to Peugeot, email them, whatever, tell them Electric wants them to make that car. Let's start a campaign to have them make that. It's called E-Legend too. Like, that's a very much concept car name. It's not a production car name, really. It doesn't sound like one. But I like it as a concept name. I think they need a new name for the production version. And, of course, it's always, you know, it's a concept car. Once it makes it to production, it's completely different and whatnot. Keep it like that, like as much as you can.
This seems, at least on the outside, it seems like something that could be done.
Yeah.
I don't know how aerodynamic that front end is, but the inside seems like the bigger stretch. Like, that looks like Austin Powers or something.
You know what the exterior, what kind of what it reminded me of a little bit?
What?
The Volt prototype.
Oh, yeah.
You remember the Volt prototype? It looked a lot more aggressive than the Volt ever did, the production versions ever did. I think it has some feel to it like that. Anyway, you make that car, Peugeot, and you might have a buyer in me.
Yeah, we'll definitely review it for sure.
Yeah. All right, we're going to leave you guys on this. Go check out the Peugeot E-Legend on Electrek right now. Beautiful car. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. Thanks a lot to our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/Electrek. We're gonna ship your things out a lot soon, by the end of the month, hopefully. And check us back, same time, same place, next week. Bye-bye.